B-Pod Studios.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Hey, we got football tonight. Yes, the Panthers come into town. They'll take on the Patriots. Patriots lost their first preseason game tonight. And no word yet on who's playing tonight. I'll wait for that Mike Reese tweet. He usually gives things away early on. But all the coverage right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub begins with Patriots Preview, which is the pregame show. Starts today at 4 o'clock. Deshaun Watson, his suspension, went from 6 games to 11 games. He's going to lose a lot of money. The Browns are going to lose a lot of money, and they're going to probably stink early on. But he's suspended for 11 games. Too. Speaking of stink, Chicago and the Seahawks played last night. Geno Smith, he got the start at quarterback for Seattle, and Justin Fields went 5 of 8 in his minimal time on the football field. Oh, and hey, the Red Sox, they played last night, but they lost in Pittsburgh. They'll start a series in Baltimore tonight. First pitch is at 7:05. Headlines, they are brought to you by Boston Prolotherapy. Do what Ted Johnson and thousands of others have done and eliminate your joint pain without surgery at BostonProlotherapy.com. I'm Joe Murray. Next update in 30 minutes.
In season.
One thing where the Celtics should have had the advantage.
Or off season.
You got Patriots news.
No station keeps you connected to Boston sports like we do.
Whatever, okay.
98.5, The Sports Hub. Toucher and Rich.
That's got to be a soul-killing exercise.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Hour number two of Toucher and Rich. Fred and Rich off today. Everyone will be back on Monday. Joe Murray, Adam Jones here for Friday. Bert Breer is the senior NFL reporter and lead content strategist for the MMQB. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, which is really Zoom. Bert finally back in the friendly confines of his basement. A dazzling background as always, sir. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, I'm actually super jealous of all the people who can take like end of summer vacations. I haven't been able to do that in like 16 years, 17 years, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So
you just get the beginning of the summer.
Rich. Huh?
You just get the beginning of the summer.
Yeah, my summer ends basically like July 15th for the most part.
Yeah, actually, Bert and I were talking about this.
Yeah, like, Bert and I would know. Yeah. I mean, I honestly, I don't understand people who do what I do who can take time off like once the season starts if possible.
Yeah. I mean,
you know what I mean? So like I'm jealous. I'm jealous of Fred and Rich is the bottom line.
Yeah. I so aren't we all, but honestly, Bert, real quick, we've discussed this in the past. I mean, the football season isn't over when the football season is over. There's a lot of offseason stuff you're responsible for, and you have legit like 2 weeks at the beginning of July and that's it.
You know, it's funny. It's like everybody who is involved with the NFL at almost any level, like their anniversaries are all middle of June to middle of July.
Yeah.
All of them. And like, sure enough, like my anniversary is June 14th. Like,
attaboy.
When people get married, that's when people go away. That's every year, like clockwork, you feel like you're on a treadmill. It's like you get like 3 weeks in there where as long as somebody doesn't blow their hand off with fireworks, you're okay. You
know? All right, so we're getting the recharged and rejuvenated Burt Breer is what we're getting.
Look at you. Well, yeah. we saw Burt. It was a hostage tape the last time we saw Burt. He was in a hotel room on the West Coast, and he had one light bulb because it was he was in Seattle doing camps, Jones, and he had one light bulb in his hotel room in his face. It was like there was
better.
A guy with a gun to his head just off camera.
Sounds better than in here.
Well, are you in Morrissey Boulevard?
Yes, Joe and I are on Morrissey Boulevard. I've already been yelled at by my wife that I awoke the child leaving this morning. So I it's a good thing I'm out of the home. Yeah,
I managed to somehow wrangle my free pass. I'm still broadcasting from home.
Jones,
today.
You'll get better at that. By the way, you'll learn like to. Yeah. I'm very heavy footed. Mm-hmm. Like over the years, you learn like it is not worth. Not making the effort to be as quiet as you possibly can.
I already don't appreciate your tone on this. Like, I didn't make the effort to tiptoe around my house this morning. I already appreciate that. Like, it was my fault. Now, what, are you taking my wife's side on this?
I'm just saying, like you will get better at it. I promise you will get better at it.
I think I'm pretty good at it.
We can debate this.
Wife is better. Your wife is better at catching you.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's
and
true.
Nagging.
She's very good at that. That's true. Yes.
All right. So, Burt, Deshaun Watson. Let's start with Deshaun Watson. 11 games, a $5 million fine in counseling. And I was just reading a Jason Cole article on Outkick this morning. Saying basically, and the headline is, why Deshaun Watson coming back and playing his first game in Houston is incomprehensibly stupid. And he says, Watson coming back to play in Houston is something like Michael Vick announcing his return to the game in front of the Westminster Kennel Club. I thought the NFL was going to avoid him playing in Houston at all costs. It seems like a bargain. You know, the players union basically told them, we're going to sue you if you suspend them for a year. The NFL's like, well, we're not giving you six games, and they met somewhere in the middle.
So I think, like, first of all, from the NFL's perspective, you want to really kind of focus on what they are and who's in charge. I think those are the two things that are really important here. What they are is a business. What they are is a forward-facing business where public relations is very, very important to them. And so the optics of this whole thing were going to be central to everything all along. And that's why I think you saw from the start, they were trying to create the perception that they were trying to create the perception that they were being tough on this, right? Like as much as they possibly could every step of the way. They pushed it out there when Sue L. Robinson was deliberating that they wanted a full year. They kept pushing it out there that they wanted a year. And the reason why is if it came back like this, they could say, you know what? We tried, right? So what they are is a forward-facing business. And so I think the optics of this whole thing were really, really important. They had to balance that with who's in charge, okay? And, you know, I think a big piece of this is the owners and what the union was planning on doing. And how the union was planning on attacking this if it didn't go their way. And they were going to call out owners and say the owners have been behaving in a certain way that is not that unlike what we're seeing with Deshaun Watson when it comes to disrespecting women. And the league has done nothing about it. So you tell us about precedent, right? So I think in the end, like you add those two things together and the league's goal here was to A, look as hard on crime as they possibly could, because they knew after, you know, everything they went through 8 years ago with the Ray Rice thing and several other cases since, that they couldn't come off looking like they weren't being tough on this, while at the same time avoiding going to federal court, because they knew A, if they go to federal court, it was going to hang over their season, right? And that again goes back to what they are, right? Because they're a business, right? Like, so they didn't want it hanging over their season the way the Brady thing hung over their season in 2015. And it also comes back to who's in charge. Because if it goes into federal court, do you know what's going to be in those legal briefs?
Yeah.
The owners are going to be in those briefs.
Yeah, I was just going to say
and all that's going to be public.
And so laundry. Yeah.
All of the owners who have been involved in these workplace transgressions, stuff outside of the workplace, all of that was going to wind up in the public sphere. And I guarantee you the owners didn't want that. And that ultimately, I think, was the union and Deshaun Watson's leverage here, was if you want to fight dirty with us, if you want to go to the mat with us, we're going to air all of your dirty laundry.
So who was pushing for that? You said the owners don't want that exposed. I mean, I'm assuming that's all of them who don't want to have to go through this and you know, be deposed and things like this. But who among the owners was pushing for this most strongly outside of Cleveland?
I mean, I don't know that there was a single owner that was, but like I can tell you, like Jerry Jones, if you go back to the Ezekiel Elliott case, like he has been sort of leading the charge on let's outsource this. We keep stepping on rakes. Let's get the hell out of the discipline business. Let's like, why is it worth so much to us to prove how tough Roger is? Like, let's just get rid of, like, let's hand this off to somebody else. And that way, like, it won't be the PR nightmare. And I think there's merit to that. And I think that's sort of what they tried to do here. You know, like if you look at it, like Roger didn't really rule on anything, right? Like Roger, I mean, the first phase of the process, they negotiated away in the 2020 CBA. That's why Sue Robinson heard that phase of the case, right? And then the second part of the process, when he could have, when he had negotiated the power to have the hammer,
he appointed somebody, right?
He handed that off.
Right,
but he handed that off. Why did he hand that off?
Well, but isn't that effectively, I mean, that is a PR game. That's just a PR shell game.
It is a PR game. It is a PR game, but it's part of like the way, it's part of like Jerry's thing, right? Like Jerry's thing was, like after going through the Zeke thing, I think Jerry's thing was, why are we pitting ourselves against prominent players over and over and over again? Why are we putting ourselves in a position to make mistakes on these things? Why are we positioning ourselves to get involved in really thorny issues that we're not qualified to deal with?
Wow. This is smart from Jerry Jones. Right.
Why are we trying to act like the FBI when we don't have subpoena power, when we can't get people to talk to us? Outsource that. And like honestly, like I think that there is logic to that. Like, why should a sports league be doing that?
There is no reason. I mean, I couldn't agree more. But the question is, why did it take the NFL so long?
They've messed it up so many times.
So this is the straw that broke the camel's back? I mean, this as opposed to the last 10, 15 years.
No. The 2020 CBA is what changed things. Because that's when they negotiated away the power. This is just the first high-profile case under the new CBA, right?
Like, so,
but this was negotiated away in 2020.
Do you think now that we've gone through all of this and it's taken forever to get a Deshaun Watson suspension? I mean, he was basically suspended with pay last year because of what everyone was trying to get their ducks in a row. Are we going to see this same kind of thing over and over and over? Because this isn't the last high-profile case the NFL is going to have to deal with here.
I mean, this is the new process, yeah. Like, this is the new process where, you know, and I think part of it was, so the NFL, again, like, they're very conscious of PR. And I don't totally begrudge them that. Like, it's PR should be important for a business that like is based on how many eyeballs they get, right? Like, I mean, like it's like that there should be a PR element for them in all of this. But I mean, yeah, I mean, I think that there was that feeling that this was going to be the first time they go through the process. So how do you find a way to both make sure that you're not completely undermining the process while still looking like you're tough, right? What you do is you keep fighting it, but you keep handing it off. You keep saying, we're looking for a year, we're looking for a year, we're looking for a year, but you keep handing it off. And then eventually you negotiate a settlement because, well, hey, maybe they were going to rule against us. So like, if you look at the totality of it, like that's what it is like, they couldn't afford to look like they were being light on something like this after what happened with Ray Rice, but they also didn't want to undermine the process they put in place, which was designed to take that power out of their hands. And I mean, we'll see whether or not they've been able to accomplish both here, but this is like sort of how it was supposed to work.
So real quick, Jones, I just want to add this in. So you think moving forward that another high profile case comes along, it's going to take the NFL going way over the top, the union threatening to sue to bring it down. No discipline is going to take place quickly.
No, it might. I mean, it might. Like, I think that there was, I mean, so the NFL, I think the NFL was, essentially looking for an exit door the whole time on this thing, right? Like, so I think if you go back to like the, when this thing was, you know, being deliberated over by Sue Robinson, at the end of June, she basically said to the sides, and this didn't even get out there at the time, but she said, I'm not ruling until the first week of August. Well, why would she do that? She would do that because she wanted to create a 5-week window where she says, you guys figure it out on your own. Yeah. And if you can't, then I'll have to rule. So they pushed back to the table, and that was where the NFL was like, oh God, this didn't go our way. Right. So they could sense that Sue Robinson wasn't going to give them the kind of penalty they wanted. So what did they do? They aggressively push out there through the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, which are the two papers that all of the owners read, right? They push it out there. We asked for at least a year in a settlement, and absent a settlement, we're going to pursue an indefinite suspension. Why would they be so aggressive pushing it out there if that might upset the arbitrator? Because they felt like the arbitrator was going to go the other way.
Right.
And so I think that that was part of their exit strategy was, if the arbitrator, whatever the arbitrator rules, we'll have it out there that it's that we wanted to be much tougher on this. And if the public doesn't react in a really, really strong way, then maybe we can just walk away. What happened when the 6-game suspension happened? The public reacted really, very strongly. And so they said, okay, we got to take this to the next level. And so it sort of forced them to go to another level with it. But I think the whole time they were looking for an exit strategy.
Okay, we'll have more with Bert coming up, and we'll also discuss Tom Brady's absence and the Patriots. What the hell are they doing? That's all ahead with Bert coming up next Friday edition of Toucher and Rich.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We're waking up. Boston sports fans.
It really feels like a big-time radio show.
Toucher and Rich.
Are you listening out there?
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Yeah. Friday edition of Toucher and Rich. Bert Breer is here for the hour. We spent the first portion discussing Deshaun Watson, but there's a lot of weirdness taking place in Tampa, Bert, and it has to do with Tom Brady, who has just disappeared from Tampa Bay camp, and no one is saying exactly what the problem is. Apparently, everyone is healthy in his family, but this was a planned absence. No one's really sure when he's coming back. Todd Bowles, when given a chance to tell everyone when he was coming back, kind of declined to do so yesterday. What do you know about what's going on down there?
Yeah, it's a little weird that Todd would say that he wasn't sure when he was coming back, because, like, my understanding is it was planned, and like a lot of other people was expecting that he'd be back after they play the Titans this weekend. I'm not sure. I think it's tomorrow night, maybe, that he would be back on Monday when they get back to practicing again. The weird thing, and I think I said this to you guys last week, was like, if a 28-year-old guy is able to take a Veterans Day off in the middle of training camp, well, then it makes sense that a 45-year-old would get more allowances. And like, my understanding again was that this was pre-planned, and that there are things that Brady maybe had on the calendar while he was retired that he wanted to continue with. Now, does it like kind of weird me out that Todd Bowles would say that like right before he's supposed to come back? Yeah, I think that's a little strange. And I think it's fair to look at this and say, like, how much did he really want to play for the Bucs this year? So, again, like, I don't have any, like, tangible reason not to believe that he won't be back and everything won't be fine. But I certainly, you know, think what Bowles said yesterday should get everybody's attention.
So it was pre-planned, and that's a mm-hmm. that's a neat trick that Brady pulled. You fake retire, you put a bunch of stuff on the calendar, and then you get to just take time off from training camp.
Maybe you should try it, Jones.
Yeah, that's a good idea. But okay, so fine. So it's approved by the team. I get that it's approved by the team. How does the team feel about it, though?
I mean, they had to do what they had to do to get him back. I think that's what they felt like. And look, like, I don't think this thing, the way it went down was actually really interesting, because I do think, like, the Buccaneers, for the most part, called his bluff. Like, if you look at it, like, and I know a lot of people have talked about Miami. I think San Francisco was in play, too, at one point. And he retires, and I might get the date wrong, but it was like right around January 20th, right after that game, whatever, 20th, 24th, whatever. And so, you know, he retires, and then you have that 6-week period. And I think Brady legitimately thought, okay, like, if I want to come back, I'm going to cool off and I'm going to, you know, see if I want to play again. This is going to get me announcing my retirement. It's going to get everybody off my back. And I'm going to see if I can figure out something here. And I think figuring out something was maybe going somewhere else. And like, I think that it may have been in the back of his head. I don't know this for sure, but it may have been in the back of his head. The Buccaneers are going to do me a solid because I won the Super Bowl for them. And he saw where, like, the Patriots sort of did a solid for Gronk that way, right? Like, where they let Gronk go where Gronk wanted to go. And so you get to the combine, and now all of a sudden you hear the messaging from the Bucs. That wasn't an accident. You heard Jason Light say, "We're leaving the light on for him," right? The GM. You heard the coach, Bruce Arians, say, "We wouldn't trade him for 5 first-round picks." That wasn't messaging to all of us. That was messaging to Tom. That was saying, if you're playing anywhere, dude, it's going to be right here. And their leverage point was the start of free agency, because they had a massive number of free agents. And so Brady knew that if he didn't come back, if he didn't signal to his teammates, like, "I'm playing," you know what was going to happen with all those free agents?
Gone.
They were all going to leave. Yeah. And he was going to be left with a terrible team to come back to. So he had to make a decision before the start of free agency. The Bucs, I think, smartly used that as their leverage point. And so it does make me wonder if they're in doing what they need to do to get him back, and then having to go through all that to come back, if there might be some lingering stuff there.
I'm wondering how far Brady can push this, because basically, because the preseason is shortened, this is mm-hmm. unprecedented. You lose your starting quarterback for some very big team building stuff, the installation stuff. And
so I push back on that a little, though. Do you guys remember when Brett Favre came back?
Yes.
In the middle of August. Like, yeah. I believe with the Vikings, you can look it up, but I believe with the Vikings, he showed up in the middle of August in 2009. And he was younger than Brady at that point.
But he had a good year. But you don't want to compare Brady to Favre. No, like, Favre was always checked out.
But here's what you can consider, right?
But both teams sold their souls.
He showed up in the middle of August. That was to a team that he didn't have any background with. He just showed up, right? Like, still to learn his teammates, learn the program, all that different stuff. They went to the NFC title game. Then he did the same thing the next year, and it didn't go as well. But, you know, I think that to some degree, when you're that age, I think you can pull off some things that other people can't pull off. And like, it wouldn't surprise me either if a guy that age looks at it and says, "You know what? Like, spending a week with my family and like kind of decompressing and get myself ready for the grind, maybe there's more value in that for me than there is in grinding out a random week in training."
Well, that was more to my point. I'm thinking that Brady can push this once the regular season starts. When I was a kid and I was in the Patriots locker room every day, Roman Pfeiffer was a linebacker for the Patriots. Pfeiffer had a deal where after the Sunday mm-hmm. game, he'd get on a plane, fly to the West Coast, and be back in time for Wednesday practice. I can see Brady, because that was right at the end of Pfeiffer's career, and Belichick understood to get Pfeiffer on the field at 100%, he had to let him do that. Is something similar? Can Brady pull something similar with Bowles now that Brady's in that Pfeiffer position?
Well, that was part of it, too, with Brady. I mean, if you remember, one of the reasons why he picked the Bucs over the Chargers was because he's got a son in New York. And it would have been really, really difficult for him to ever see his son in New York if he's going from Los Angeles to New York back and forth during the year, or his son has to do that. much easier if he's in Florida, right? Like that's.
Yeah, I mean, it's not close, but it is easy.
But if you have a private plane, money bird, you can pretty much fly wherever you want to go,
right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like that's a big difference. Like, if you're talking about like wanting to pop home to see your kid on a Tuesday, like, right? Like, you can't really do that. Like, if your kid's on the other side of the country, at least not regularly. If the kid's in Florida and you're flying private, that's probably pretty doable.
I mean, I look at what Brady's been able to do.
Of course, you wouldn't know about flying private, right, Jones?
No, no, definitely not. No.
Never been on a Cessna, Jones? Ever?
No. No, but I've, like, done a red eye. I've done a red eye from L.A. to Boston and, like, woke up and, you know, did my job the next day.
He's
like,
not doing the red eye that me and you were doing.
No, I understand. I mean? Exactly. That's my point. Like, I've done the red eye, and, it can be done. I've done a red eye in a weekend and back to L.A. It does suck, but you can do it. You could do it.
No, Jones. The red eye always seems like a better idea on paper than in practice. Like when you're scheduling that, it's like, all right, I'll get back.
Let's just not make him dad of the year for being in Tampa when his kid's in New York. That's all I'm saying.
I see. I side with Jones.
No, but I'm just saying
it'd
be easier. It's just much more manageable.
Yeah, I understand. But again, if you have private plane money and the plane is in Burbank waiting for you, warming its engines, and you have a limo from the stadium to Burbank, and you get on the Cessna that's waiting for you, and you're gone, it takes a lot less time.
I'm not arguing. I'm just saying it was part of his logic. In Tampa over the Chargers.
All the family stuff with Brady's so annoying. Like, you need another week with your family now? Like, you just had the whole off season, and you were fake retired. You had more time with your family than anybody. Like, you need another week? Like, the whole family thing's just such a fake excuse.
So, bottom line, Tampa's willing to put up with everything at this point. They're so far down the track. It's kind of like the Astros when they had Clemens back in the day. Up at the All-Star
Honestly, that's like where the Favre comparison works, right? Can you remember how annoyed the Packers were in his last few years when he would like disappear to his ranch in Mississippi and it'd be like, I'll decide when I decide. And then they go through like the whole off-season program and it's like still no word from Favre. Like, but they put up with it. Why do they put up with it? Because he's Brett Favre. Then the Vikings put up with it. You know, the Jets didn't really, because the Jets traded for him and then he was gone after a year. So that was like a little too short of a period. But like, we've seen this before. And like, I think there's a comparison there, right? Like with what the Vikings and Packers were able to put up with Favre to make it work at the end. And what the Bucs are willing to do with Brady.
Well, look, at the end of the day, I don't want to be a hypocrite about this. Like, the Patriots should have done whatever to keep Brady and bend over backwards for him, and so should the Bucs. So, like, if this is what Brady wants to do, then you have to do it, because he's Tom Brady. Like, I do agree with you on that. That doesn't make what Brady's doing is right at the end of the day. Like, I just think Brady doing this is very wrong. I would put up with it because he's Tom Brady, and I have a chance to win a Super Bowl with Brady, and I don't have a chance with whoever else they're going to roll out there. So I would put up with it, but it doesn't make what he's doing right, especially if everybody in his family's healthy. If what we're being told is that it's not like a family health issue, it was pre-planned and he's, you know, over in Europe or wherever he is, just on family vacation, it's bullcrap.
Right. I mean, I guess the counter to that, though, Jones, would just be that no one's ever played at his age before at that level. And so, like, a guy playing at that age, to continue to keep playing at that age, just has to approach it a different way, you know? And I think there comes a point when a guy's accomplished enough. Like, if you were Justin Herbert and you were doing that in LA, your teammates would absolutely look at you sideways, you know? Like, when you're Tom Brady, you've accomplished so much. That's just a different thing altogether.
Now that Tampa's done all of this and they've sold their soul, is the end game worth it? Are the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
It already was worth it.
Okay, is it worth it? Is it worth it this year? Is this team good enough to win a Super Bowl?
Yeah, it is worth it this year because two reasons. Number one, you're in the NFC, so like really, realistically, who do you have to go through? The Rams might not be what they were last year and weren't great for the balance of the year. The Niners are the other one. Let's see what happens with Trey Lance. The Packers, of course, will be there. But
they're down.
You may only have to beat one or two quality teams to get to the Super Bowl. And then you've got Tom Brady in the Super Bowl in a one-off situation. And you look at the second reason is you look at the composition of their roster. they're built to win right now. Like, it's 100% worth it to have that quarterback in there with a roster that's built to win right now. If this was like a young roster, we'd be talking about something else. But based on the composition of their team, there's no question that it's worth it, because you need a guy like that when you've got a roster like they do.
All right. 617-779-0985. We'll take a break, and then we'll kind of dive into the Patriots and the confusion that I know Jones and I have about who's doing what. We'll see what Bert's feeling is about that next Friday edition of Touch.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Don't you dare think that we think we're superstars.
No. We get kicked in the reality nuts about once a week.
Toucher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Okay, so we have one more segment with Bert. Coming up later on in the program, we'll talk to Phil Perry about the Patriots. We have fantasy football with Mike Lockhart. Everybody's draft is taking place in the next couple of weeks, I know. The draft I have with Mike is coming up on September 1st, and he and I have back-to-back picks. So usually when I have a fantasy draft, I go to Mike and ask for suggestions. I can't do that now because I think he picks 8th and I pick 9th. So I'm going to try and glean whatever knowledge I can out of him at 8:20. But we have Bert for one more segment, and we have not discussed the Patriots yet, Bert. And we could talk about the Patriots and the mess that they are kind of putting out there for the next 3 or 4 hours. No one understands who's calling plays. No one understands how the new offense is coming along. Bill Belichick is not forthcoming with any answers. It looks like Matt Patricia's calling plays, but people keep telling me that Bill's in control of the offense. What are you hearing at this point?
Yeah, I think the best way to describe it, and this is also it's what I've heard. It's also sort of what I observed when I was there the other day. There's definitely, I would say Bill is sort of over the offense the same way he's been over the defense the last couple of years, where it was clear Bill was involved on defense. Like, there were those shots from the sideline where you'd see everybody kind of huddled around him on defense. And then there were times where you could tell he was calling the plays in. And that's what's so interesting about this now, is I feel like Bill is sort of playing that role on offense now. You got two other coaches there who haven't coached on offense extensively either. I think for all the heat that they've taken, I do think Joe Judge and Matt Patricia are good coaches, but you're asking them to do something. He made a funny face there, Jones.
if you've listened to Jones for 5 seconds, you knew that was coming. Jones.
But I do think this would be a huge task for anybody, to switch sides of the ball. And so, not only now are you putting your offense in a weird spot where everyone, this is one of the things, when I've been to Vegas a couple times now since, Josh and his staff got there. And one of the things that sort of come up with those guys is how, everything that they built last year for Mac, almost every person who was involved in building that offense for him is gone now. Nick Cayley is probably the only one left. But you have the guy who was helping put together the run game, the offensive line coach, Carmen Bursillo, Mick Lombardi's there, Jerry Schaplinski. They've got a lot of people who are involved in building the offense over the years, and then people who are involved in building the offense specific for Mac last year beyond just Josh are gone. So how can you build off of his first year if the people who put that together aren't there? And that's where I think the problem arises for a lot of quarterbacks who go through those sorts of changes going from year one to year two. So that's a part of it. I think the learning curve for Matt and Joe moving to offense is part of it. And then I think pulling Bill away from the defense is part of it too, because what does that mean for the defensive side of the ball now? Because for the last 22 years, they've always had the fail safe over there that if there's any issue with the defensive staff, they've got one of the greatest defensive coaches of all time as their failsafe, right? Well, now you're pulling him away from the defense. He's moving over to the offense and helping with the offense. So now there's going to be more on Gerard Mayo and Steve Belichick. And my understanding is, over the last couple of years, the way it's worked is Gerard Mayo runs the meetings and Steve Belichick calls it on game day. So like you've sort of got like a co-op situation going there too. So I'm just like, I wonder about like the way the whole program is going to work. And when you ask people, what they say is, well, it's Bill. So I've always thought that that's when the Patriots are in trouble. Like, and that's a relative term, in trouble, right? But like all, over the years, I always thought like when people said, well, they've got Tom and Bill, so they're going to be fine, which was true. But those were usually, when people were saying that, that was usually the years when they weren't going to compete for a championship, right? And now it's just turned, and now it's just because they've got Bill. And I sort of wonder where this is going to go because of that, because it's not like they've been a super team the last couple of years because of just Bill.
What was your feeling on, and maybe you said some of this with Beadle and Zoe earlier in the week, but what were your feeling, what was your feeling on the fights? And secondarily, how do you think Bill felt about how it all went down?
You know, I think, well, I can give you both sides of it. I don't think the Panthers coaches had a huge issue with the Patriots coaches. Like, I think the two sides thought they were easy to work with. I think some people on the Patriots side wondered whether or not the Carolina coaches had control of their players. That said, I don't think the Patriots players were without fault. Now, the hit on Christian Wilkerson was totally out of line. And the fact that Matthew Slater was over there, like getting into the mix, right? Like the hit, that tells you everything you need
to
know.
I'm sorry, the hit was out of line, or the standing over him and like taunting him was out of line?
Over him. Okay. But I think the hit was borderline, probably out of line. You know, and then the standing over him when he was clearly hurt was way over the line, which is why Matthew Slater was over there. That said, like going and hitting Christian McCaffrey late, taking him to the ground late, was way out of bounds too. And you have to know that if you're doing that to their star player, who's been through injuries the last couple of years, who's one of the most respected and prominent players in the league, you're asking for it. You know what I mean? Like, so. And I think that could have been like a go for the head of the snake type of thing. And if the Panthers took it that way, that's understandable, where maybe the Patriots were so pissed off by what had happened a few minutes earlier that they say, okay, like, look who we're going to go after now. And I don't think that's a great way to handle it either, you know? So like these people who are saying like, it's all the Panthers. Yeah, the Panthers were at fault, you know, for the first one, but like the way they retaliated was way out of line too.
If this was any other older head coach, say Pete Carroll did this to his coaching staff and his players were wildly undisciplined, or Andy Reid did this to his coaching staff and his players were getting in fights, you know, during
joint
practices.
There's a perfect example of this, you know.
Well, what would you say about that head coach?
No. There's a perfect example of this.
What is it?
It was the Dream Team Eagles. Do you guys know who their defensive coordinator was?
Wait. No.
No,
it was Juan Castillo. This is the only one that I can. This is the only thing that I can like. This is the only comparison that I can think of, right? Like that really works in comparing what's going on in New England to something that's happened in the past. Juan Castillo was like one of the most respected offensive line coaches in the league. You remember those Eagles teams with Donovan McNabb had incredible offensive lines, right? And so Juan Castillo was one of these guys, like a Scarnecchia, where it was like, this guy has like created the like a great pipeline of offensive linemen. They're developing them. They play together. They've got identity, all of that stuff. Well, they put that team together. Andy Reid fired Sean McDermott. So it's not quite the same, but it's a respected coach going out the door. He fires Sean McDermott after 2010, and they wanted to bring in Jim Washburn as the defensive line coach. But like other people didn't want to work with Jim Washburn. So how do we find a coordinator? Let's take Juan Castillo. He's a great football coach, and we'll just make him the defensive coordinator.
Brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Complete disaster.
Okay.
And like people would tell you he got fired before the end of the year. They wind up replacing him, I think, at the end of the year with Todd Bowles, right? And Todd was able to stabilize things, but it was too little too late. And you could argue that was the move of Juan Castillo from offensive line coach to defensive coordinator in Philadelphia I think people there would tell you that was the beginning of the end for Andy Reid in Philadelphia, was when he did that.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe?
Because it had nothing to do with Juan Castillo not being a good football coach. Juan Castillo was a great football coach, but he wasn't a defensive coordinator.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, you can't have a – I mean, it's – if you put a sushi chef, you know, in a steakhouse – you might not like the results.
It's not going to come out well, huh, Bert? I got one for you.
I knew I could chew with that one, Joe.
Yeah, I know. I could stick my head up a bull's ass, but I'd rather take the butcher's word for it. Anyways, so the Big Ten, man, making a big splash, new TV, CBS.
Yeah, how about
like, that's going to be, like, we're now going to hear that CBS music.
How jarring was that, though? That was so weird.
$8 billion, is that right?
Huh? Yeah.
$8 billion.
Yeah. So my question to you is, I'm jazzed up for that. We're going to see a ton of Big Ten games now on television, but there's this Notre Dame Ohio State game.
It was on TV.
Well, I know, but still, Ohio State Notre Dame. Are you hyped up for this thing? I got the line at 14. It's moved to 15, but I think Ohio State is going to be an absolute wagon. And then I have one other question. Do you think Coach Halfley from BC could be an NFL coach someday?
Yeah, I do. I think Jeff's doing a great job there. And I think people are going to see at Boston College, not that the listenership for Boston College football is huge here. But like, I do think he's brought in a different type of athlete there, you know? Like, I think he's brought in
Zay Flowers,
a bigger, longer, faster athlete. Like, he's using prototypes the way Ohio State uses prototypes. That's where Jeff came from, having been the defensive coordinator when Chase Young and Jeff Okuda were there. And I think they're getting to the point now where they're going to really turn a corner. And yeah, I mean, Jeff coached for Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco. You know, that's where Ohio State had plucked him from. And he coached under several different coaches in the NFL. So I do think, you know, he puts together 2-3 good years at BC. Maybe I think the bigger programs will certainly look at him, but I think NFL teams would be smart to look at him too.
That's interesting because you mentioned Zay Flowers Jones. He was a borderline second round pick or first round pick and went back to school. And this kid Djurkovic they have as a quarterback looks to be NFL caliber also on a high draft pick, right?
Yeah. I don't know about a high draft pick. I think there are a lot of, like, if you look at next year's quarterback class, I think they all have flaws. I don't think that there's somebody where you can say, like, I'm going to go, I bet my bank account that the guy's going in the top 10 next year. But obviously, like, Bryce Young has a chance. C.J. Stroud has a chance. Will Levis from Kentucky has a chance. Tyler Van Dyke from Miami has a chance. Djurkovic, I mean, like, the problem's been injuries, right? Like, but he's certainly been looked at as, like, at least, like, a solid third, fourth-round pick. And as we've seen over the years, those guys can really rise if they have monster, like, final years. Like, that's what Joe Burrow was. Like, Joe Burrow was a third, fourth round pick going into his last year at LSU, and we all know what happened.
Good job by Ohio State letting him go.
Yeah. But these transfer kids have done well. And this year we're going to see a ton of it, right? Like, so many guys have jumped around. You know, I'm curious.
Oh, yeah.
But now, though, we've seen that. You mentioned Burrow. We've seen the guy that transferred who played well, at, you know, typically at two schools and then go on to the NFL. So that's a guy I'd look at.
Yeah, Justin Fields was another one that was a transfer. Yeah, so... But that's the way it is at that position. You know, like, that's, I think it's hard for college coaches now to keep those guys in school. You know, you aren't going to have the kid who's willing to sit 2 years so he can start in year three anymore. Like Mac Jones is a massive outlier. Like, in most cases, Mac Jones was in the same recruiting class as Tua Tagovailoa. Like, Tua started, like, was playing as a freshman, like, then winds up starting the next year. Most kids in that circumstance are out of there. You know what I mean? Like,
Tua was almost out of there, right? He almost wasn't going to wait at Alabama.
Yeah, because he was behind Jalen Hurts, and they had to – well, they were platooning them.
Yeah.
Like, well, so he was coming in and playing.
And in the national title game, yeah.
Right, yeah. So, like, that was the whole basis for him coming in the national title game. But, like, that was – I mean, a big part of it, like, was
Spencer,
like,
Rattler,
let's keep him happy.
Those guys moving around this year, I think they're going to be the
Rattler's
next,
at South Carolina. Yeah. There are a few of them. Like, Rattler's a perfect example of, like, what I'm talking about, right? Like, so I think Stroud's great. I think Bryce Young's great. Like, but we've seen this go the other way too. Like, we talked about, like, the Burrow thing, right? Where guys go from third, fourth round picks to being first round picks. Well, like Spencer Rattler at this time last year at Oklahoma, everybody's talking about him like he was going to go in the top 10. And then by October, he was benched. So these things can go the other way, too.
All right, Bert, you're in your house today. Are you on the road again next week? I mean, is this the outlier?
Yeah, so I'll be in the road, I think, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I'm going to try to go to Tampa next week.
Nice.
I'll see the Jets and Giants next week. And I think I'm going to see the Eagles and Dolphins because there's the joint practices. So,
Jets and Giants, man, throw the records out. That's going to be a barn burner.
Yeah, they're playing for the Snoopy trophy. That Snoopy trophy.
Woo-hoo! All right, Bert, thank you very much.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, Bert Brewer, the MMQB. We'll take a break. Joe Murray's got the headlines, and then we're back with more. Friday edition of Toucher and Rich.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.